We are going to have a time where we get to kind of do some worship together with our kids and then involve them in actually doing communion together. And it's just going to be a sweet time for us. But why family? Why was this a core value early for us? Why is it still a core value? Well, first of all, because Eureka is a really family-oriented community. In fact, when we moved here, my wife and I moved here, it was one of the things we noticed very quickly. We lived in Baldwin, and we liked Baldwin. We lived there for 13, 14 years. And we liked it, but it just seemed busy and it just seemed crowded. And the worst part of Baldwin was the fact that from my neighborhood, no matter where I wanted to go in the world, I had to turn left on Manchester Road, which is not of God, okay? There are a lot of moments where as I turned left on a Manchester Road, I said things I had to repent for later. Manchester Road also kind of represented kind of the way that area of West County was like. It just busy, crowded, intense, and it just like, it seemed like the whole structure of West County wants to tell you family's important while at the same time trying to tear the family apart. And we moved out here, and one of the things we noticed is that there's just a different feel, a different rhythm, different values, different attitudes about family here. It's a very family-oriented community, and we knew that. But we also knew that even though there is this appearance of family, healthy families and good families here, that the family is really struggling and is broken, both here and in our culture. We found out very quickly that there was all kinds of, you know, underlying, undercover sins that are around the family structure in Eureka. A lot of brokenness here, a lot of struggle, a lot of family idolatry, but also a lot of families who are just not honoring God and their family and seeing the results of it. And so we just knew that having a church that said, man, we're going to value family. We're going to make sure that we don't overstructure our church so that we're so busy that we're not able to be family, and that we're constantly looking for ways to support, build, encourage family is a really good thing. And so it became a core value. We also firmly believe that especially in 2016, with the values and the attitudes and the changing way our culture is even looking at the issue of family, that one of the most important things that we can do as a church to display the gospel, to display the glory of God, is to help build healthy, strong families as much as we can. And so it's just kind of in our DNA, it's everything we do, we just want to help create an atmosphere in this church where we are proclaiming the gospel, we are preaching the beauty and the glory of Christ in such a way that that beauty and glory of Christ is filtering into our lives and changing the structure of our families. We do stand for certain things, and we're not ashamed of those, but we believe that the greatest apologetic, or one of the greatest apologetics and greatest witnesses we can have as a church, is to have families who just live for the glory of Jesus and love each other in Eureka, and that will shine and display beauty in a way that really nothing else can. We actually believe that's why God gave us families, was to be a reflection of who he is and a display of his glory. Al Mohler, who I got to hear preach this week, a group of us were at a conference this week called Together for the Gospel in Louisville. Man, we're so refreshed, so blessed by that. But in an article he wrote on the importance of family, he said this. He said, Christians affirm that the family is one of God's most essential gifts to human children, and that honoring the Creator's design for marriage and family is the pathway to glorifying God and human flourishing. God gave marriage and the family in creation to all peoples everywhere. As a testimony to this fact, every thriving society has found its way to marriage and the importance of the family. The family is the most basic unit of society, and if it is not honored and protected, society cannot long survive. What he's saying here is that, first of all, the family is God's gift to, like, even cultures who don't believe in one God who's revealed in Scripture have found beauty in the family, that it's actually part of the common grace that God has given, and that every culture everywhere has found the beauty of marriage, even if they haven't found the glory of the gospel. It is God's gift to people, that family is a gift to God's people, and he's saying that every other tier of society is dependent on the health of the family. And what's going on in our world, United States, 2016, the culture we are in, is that the culture is literally saying, how do we come back? Like, how do we solve the problems of our culture? And as they're saying this, out of the other side of their mouth, the family is under massive attack. Massive attack. And it's just like every day, our courts, our culture, the pop culture of the age, the values that come out of the media, it's just like attacking the idea of God's design for family. And is even trying to deconstruct the family. But what it's leaving in its wake is a brokenness in our world that is just staggering. In the year 1940, about 3.8% of children in 1940 were born outside of marriage, outside the relationships of marriage, okay? In 2015, that number is about 40%, which means in the last 70 years, we've gone from about 4 out of every 100 to about 40 of every 100 children who are born in our culture are born outside the family as God designed it, outside the context of marriage, outside God's purpose for us. And so what it's left in its wake is a society that has so much brokenness, so much hurt, so much struggle, so much trying to make sense of the world. And as a result, the world is hurting and they don't know what the answer is. And yes, as followers of Jesus, what we want to do is we want to stand up and say, okay, here's what we need to do. We need to proclaim the family as part of the hope for our culture. And I agree with that. But more than that, we need to be people who have the gospel proclaimed to us, the good news of Jesus that filters into our souls so that we turn that into loving my wife well, loving my kids well, living with great priorities, structuring my life so that I'm honoring God and honoring family in my life. And all of a sudden, the greatest apologetic, the greatest way we defend the faith and show the glory of Jesus is not by yelling at the culture about their family, but it's by just living the gospel in mind. I hope you just heard what I said. The greatest way we are going to display the glory of God in family is not by yelling at the culture about their families. It's about just living out the implications of the gospel in mind. And so what we want to do as a church, from day one, we've said, man, we want to be about healthy, strong families and do all we can to proclaim the gospel and do it in a way that we are supporting families, encouraging families, helping families to be what God has called them to be. And so we kind of live in a world where the family's struggling. And so how do we do this as a church? What does this look like? To get there, I want you to grab a Bible and turn to Psalm 127, a great short little psalm that just lays out God's the beauty of the family, God's purpose. If you don't have a Bible, there's one on the end of your rows. We'd love for you to have one there. And just grab one of those, and it'll be on page 441 in that Bible. I have a really raspy voice this morning, if you haven't noticed. And it's raspy because I now coach the Eureka Teal Tigers 7U softball team. And we played in a tournament yesterday. And it's the first year where I didn't get to stand out on the field with all the girls, you know, when they're playing defense. So now when they are not knowing what to do, which is on every ball hit, I have to yell from the dugout. And I am noticing now that my voice is really scratchy, really raspy. So I hope it's not too annoying for you, but that's what's going on. All right, Psalm 127. It's called A Song of Ascent, and it says of Solomon. If you have a Bible here, it says of Solomon. There are two possibilities, and I actually agree with the first one. One possibility is it's of Solomon, meaning he wrote it. The other is that it was written by David for Solomon. In other words, as David is telling his son, as David, as an adult who's near death, as a grandpa now, has a son who's going to take over the reign of the kingdom, he is trying to help his son understand what is really important. And what's really, really key here is that Solomon is going to build the temple. They already know this amazing place of worship, of sacrifice that is in Jerusalem. And as Solomon is going to build it, David is trying to make sure that Solomon and all the people who are with him understand the importance of building their lives on what really makes life work, building their lives on what lasts, and making sure that even the building of the temple does not replace the importance of God's design in their lives. And so look at what he says, Psalm 127, unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. Here's what he says. He says, listen, you can make all the plans you want. I mean, he uses two images here. He used the image of building a house and guarding a city. And he says, man, you can make all the plans you want. Here's this picture of this guy who's kind of out in the middle of the world, and he's got all the materials, he's got all the wood together, he's got hammers, he's nails, he's got drills, he's got his, you know, hard hat on, he's got his work belt on, he's ready to build, and he just starts putting boards together, he's just throwing up the structure of a house, but he has never stopped to look at the blueprints that were given by the architect. He's not paying attention. He's just throwing wood where he thinks it ought to go. And by the time he gets to the end of the house, it doesn't look right. It doesn't stand right. It's not straight. It's not plumb, which means it doesn't stand true. And all of a sudden, this house, which is the house in his mind, didn't follow the blueprints that were given to him. And therefore, the house, when the winds come and the rain comes and the struggle comes and storms show up in life, that house is not going to stand. He has labored in vain when he has built it because it was not built according to the design of the architect. Unless the Lord builds the house. Y'all, that it's just true. Unless we can figure out how to center our lives on Christ and let him be the one who speaks into our lives and leads us in what it looks like to structure our homes and our own lives around his design, we will go about the busyness of life and try to do everything we can to make our life work, and the end is going to be vain. It's going to be temporal. It's not going to work the way that God had designed it. Unless the Lord guards the city. It's a picture of a guy who's up on the wall, and he's watching as a watchman over the wall trying to protect the city. But as he's watching from the wall, he has forgotten to make sure that the army is prepared to defend. And so he's watching, he's doing everything he can to protect the city, but he is not prepared in such a way that he has the actual forces ready to defend. And here comes an enemy who comes charging, and all of a sudden you see the enemy, but you are not prepared for what it takes to keep the city safe. This is the way often we as followers of Jesus end up in our families. We can kind of see the struggle, but we have not prepared ourselves because we've not allowed Christ to be the center of our homes. We've not prepared ourselves to really what it looks like to protect the tower, to guard the city, to defend the walls so that our family, our church, even our culture is prepared to be to stand strong against what the culture is going to bring at it. Unless the Lord builds a house, they labor in vain to build it. Unless the Lord guards a city, the watchmen keep awake in vain. This is what the psalmist is trying to say to you and to me this morning. We can plan every detail of our lives well. We can start when we're 22 with a retirement plan, and at our kids' birth, we can start formulating a plan for them to have money to go to college so they won't have, you know, $100,000 of student loans. We can get them into the best preschool and make sure that they are going to the best elementary and high schools. We can get them on the best sports teams and make sure that they have every opportunity. We can make sure they have season passes at Six Flags every year so that they are happy. We can try to do everything we can to write all the checks and make them full. And what happens is in a culture where we are just driven by that, doing everything we can to make our children happy, we end up with children who feel very broken, very disconnected, very distraught, because our plans to make our children happy will not leave them happy. Unless the Lord builds a house. Unless the Lord guards the city. So look at what he says. He says, verse 2, it's vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep. Now here's the next idea. This is a guy who man, I got to provide for my family. I got to take care of them. I got to make it work. And so what happens is I get up before the kids are out of bed and I'm off to work and I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, working my tail off so I can provide for my family. And I come home and man, it's barely kissing the kids on the cheek. And then I'm mentally stressed out and I got to keep the rhythm going, but I have to provide for my family because we have to live in the house with 3-car garage and I have to drive this and I have to make sure my kids are in the best schools. I have to do all this. And all of a sudden, our lives are stressed. And look at what he says. David says to his son, listen, he gives to his beloved sleep. In other words, if we're really trusting in Christ the way we should, the rhythms of our life ought to produce rest, comfort, joy, rather than stress and intensity all the time. That is the West County way of doing life. He says it gives his beloved sleep. Now, some mothers, like I remember my wife in the middle of the night when the babies kept crying, waking up in the middle of the night saying, Lord, Psalm 127:2, give me some rest, please, for the love of God. You ever been there? Moms, yeah. Gives his beloved sleep. Claim that as a verse, right? But you know, here's God giving a promise that there is rest when our hope and trust is in him instead of in our own rhythms, our own path. Behold, children, I love this. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb, a reward. We believe that. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He will not be put to shame when he speaks to his enemies in the gate. I love this imagery. He says, children are like an arrow and a quiver, okay? So you got to picture an archer, whether it's a hunter or somebody who is an archer who's part of an army. You know, he's got a quiver that either is, like if he's riding a horse, it's right here, and he's got his bow kind of over his shoulder. If he's on foot, he's got his bow kind of hanging here. He's got a quiver of arrows, and it's like this bag in the back that's full of arrows. And he uses this imagery, and I've always loved the imagery of the arrow and the quiver, because he's saying, listen, this is what we do as parents. First of all, they are a blessing. They are a heritage. They are a reward from God that is part of God's goodness to us that we have children. I have to tell you that one of the greatest gifts that God has ever given me, like probably salvation in the gospel is up here, that Christ died for my sins is at the top. Right underneath that, among his greatest gifts to me is my wonderful wife and my kids. They are a blessing, a heritage. Now, there are days when I stare at my grass that I'm not so sure. Because when I use grass, I'm using that word very loosely. When you have 5 kids, and 2 of them are always playing wiffle ball in the backyard, and the rest are always in the front yard, run the dog around that's pooping everywhere, right? There are days when I go, oh, just that day when I will have grass in my front yard again. Oh, that day, you know, because it doesn't matter what I do. I plant grass, it never grows. It comes up for a little while and then we kill it again, right? And it's easy when I look at my yard to be frustrated with the fact that it's not growing right. But the truth of the matter is, I need to look at my grass and go, man, this is a blessing. This is a heritage. This is a good thing. It is good that I have children that ruin my yard. Like when I'm standing out there seeing the bear path where the pitching mound is for the wiffle ball game, I should say, this is God's gift to me. This is God's gift to me, right? They're a blessing from the Lord. And so to celebrate family is just one of those great gifts. And so for us as a church, it is our passion to proclaim the family and to love the family and to support you as parents as you lead your family. Because he says that like they're arrows in a quiver. Now, the picture here is beautiful because what you do with an arrow, it doesn't stay in your quiver. Sometimes that is our problem. We want to keep our kids so close to us and keep them protected that we don't use them the way God designed and send them off. And so what an archer does, he takes his arrow out, he puts it inside his bow, and he gets ready. And for an archer to do well with the arrow, and if you've been around here, you've heard me say this before, an archer has to do 3 things with an arrow for it to work. He has to, first of all, aim the arrow in the right direction, right? He's got to find his target, aim it. He has to know how to shoot depending on distance. He has to aim that arrow in the right direction. Second thing he has to do is he has to apply the right amount of tension. And the third thing he has to do is let go at the right time. That's parenting. Aim your children in the right direction. Point them to Christ. Point them to the gospel. Show them Jesus. Help them structure their lives so they know that unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain to build it. Doesn't matter where you go to college. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain to build it. It doesn't matter what you think you ought to do with your life and your job. Unless the Lord builds a house, they labor in vain to build it. If you're not teaching them that, helping them figure it out, you are not pointing them in the right direction. And if your goal for your children is just happiness, you are shooting way too short. Way too short. Your goal for your children will be that they would grow up loving Jesus and experiencing the glory of God in their lives. That will give them joy, which is way better than happiness. You aim for happiness, you will never get it. You aim for holiness and the love of Christ, joy is a byproduct. Aim them in the right direction. And sometimes, yes, we do have to apply the right amount of attention, don't we? Anybody's parents ever say, this will hurt you more than it hurt me? And then you grow up as a parent, you realize that was a lie. That was a lie. But sometimes we do have to look at our children, and with grace, not in a punitive, but we have to figure out what it looks like to discipline and love and lead our children. Sometimes that discipline does come in the form of discipline. And that's okay. We have to apply the right amount of tension, but not the type of tension that harms them, the part of tension that gives them healthy bears and helps them grow. And so apply the right amount of tension. Let them go at the right time. That's the goal. And as a church, we want to support that. And what I want to do just for a few minutes, I'm going to do two things in the sermon. The first thing I'm going to do, it's going to be so fast, you're going to miss it. I wish I had time to just unpack this all together in a whole nother sermon. That's not the purpose of this message this morning. But I'm going to share with you 8 foundational ideas that we believe are the blueprint for God's family. In other words, we think as a church we're supporting these. As families, we want to stress these in your lives and encourage you towards these. And we want this to be what Genesis stands for in our culture in a loving, gentle, compassionate way. So that we honor the God's design for the family, okay? So 8 ideas that we are standing for, 8 core teachings we promote. And then when I get done with these very quickly, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about what are the things that we as Genesis do to make this happen. And if you're part of Genesis, some of this stuff you're going to be like, oh, I noticed that. And I get that you do that. And I love that this is part of who we are. If you're new to Genesis, this is what we do to make sure that we are trying to create and structure and build gospel-centered, Christ-loving, and exalting families. All right, so 8 things. First of all, 8 core teachings that we support. The first one is this, that God is eternally in a relationship that is revealed in family terms. God is eternally in a relationship that is revealed in family terms. Now, this is a mystery. I can't preach on the Trinity this morning, but you need to understand that the way the Bible shares God with us, who is this God that we are worshiping? It tells us that there is one God who eternally exists in 3 persons, God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. And even the language that is used to explain the relationship within the Trinity is family language, which means God at the heart is a family of relationships existing, and therefore his giving the family to us is more than just giving us people that we can hang out with. His giving the family to us creates a way for like Mike, Heidi, the kids, 857 Top Notch Lane, living in that neighborhood. He has given the family so that as we live out his design in our neighborhood, in this city, we are now picturing the eternal God who is God the Father, God the Son, God the Spirit. We are picturing the beauty of family relationship that doesn't begin in creation, it begins with God. And so when you are in your neighborhood and living that out, you are picturing something greater than yourself and your family, and it means that God's gift of the family is for something way more than just who's going to bring me my bowl of soup tonight, right? And so God's design for the family begins with him. Second thing is this, marriage and the family are God's idea. God is the one who has given us family. And so marriage and a family are God's idea. They're not our idea. They're his gift to us. But his design is the one that works. We begin with the very first verses of the Bible, Genesis chapter 2 and chapter 3. God lays out his design for the family as he brings Adam and Eve together. He performs the first wedding in the Garden of Eden, and then he gives them to each other. They begin to have children and begin to live out the implications of what God has done. And I love the language. God takes Adam, who is created in the image of God. He takes Eve, who's created in the image of God, and then he brings them together and he says, and the two will become one flesh. God's idea. That's the goal, is to live out God's plan and design. Our problem is that we're in a broken world and we are broken people, sinful, broken people who our lives don't work the way it's designed. And so what was beautiful in the beginning is so hard now. So hard. And we must continue to figure out what it looks like to trust Christ, to love him, to honor him, to live out the implications of God's design. So marriage and a family are God's idea. Third thing, God's plan for marriage is one man, one woman, one lifetime. God's plan for marriage is one man, one woman for one lifetime. This is his perfect design in marriage, that he takes two people who are each in the image of God, fully in the image of God. He takes them and he puts them together so that two people become one flesh, who now the coming together makes two people who themselves are fully in God's image. He brings them together so there's something even more beautiful and something even greater in the coming together of those two people, right? And so it's rich and it's beautiful. And so as a church, we love to encourage and challenge people to get married and to love their spouses and to grow in that marriage and to encourage it. Now, that's God's idea. Now, I just said this. We live in a broken world, so it doesn't always end that way. So we recognize the fact, and I'm going to talk about this in just a minute. We recognize the fact that there is brokenness in the world where marriage does not work out the way it's supposed to. And that doesn't mean that God doesn't love people. That doesn't mean that God is done with people. God is a great God who is redemptive. But it is always our goal to see people who are married honor that relationship, because in doing so, you're honoring Christ. And it is our encourage to encourage people who aren't married to consider that as a possibility. Now, there is also the idea of people who stay single for the glory of God. That's beautiful too. But marriage is, and family are God's idea. He gave it to us. And his design is one man, one woman, one lifetime. And so if you are married, that should be your passion, your goal, to become one flesh for a lifetime. Now, I know the first question is, but what if I'm not happy in my marriage? Does that mean God doesn't want me to be happy? No. What we want you to do is we want you to come to one of our elders. We want you to have conversations with us. We want to help walk you through a process where you'll figure out what it looks like to honor Christ. That's why in just a few weeks, we're doing a marriage retreat, and we hope everybody will go. So here's a little real quick announcement. Today is kind of the deadline, and it's the deadline because I have to let the hotel know the rooming list this week. So if you're one of those people who normally register 3 weeks after the deadline, by the way, that's everybody at Genesis I just described. We need you to do that today. Listen, all I got to do is turn in $10 today to get a room, okay? That's all I need. But we really hope you will go in May with us to a marriage retreat where we're going to help build your marriage. We're going to help you figure out what it looks like to go from being side-by-side people to face-to-face where you love each other and you are building oneness in your marriage. So do that. And so that's why we do these sort of things. We want to build marriage and help people live out God's design. Number four, children are a blessing. Children are a blessing. They're a heritage from the Lord. They're a blessing. We acknowledge that. We believe that. We want you to know that children are a beautiful gift from God. And so we also want to support you as you lead your children. We want to help you honor Christ and your relationship with children. And we just want to celebrate children. You know, we're in here this morning and there's kids in here. And it can feel uncomfortable. It's not. It's beautiful. We love it. Last week we were at our 10th anniversary. And next thing you know, there's all these Eric throughout this wonderful idea of making the front of the stage a dance floor. No, who gave him that idea? Next thing you know, we had kids dancing. It was beautiful, wasn't it? It was a blessing. That is a good thing. It is not a disruption to us when we have kids around us. It is part of God's beautiful blessing, his gift to us. We love that. And so we should never get frustrated with our own kids on a level that we're just like, oh, I just wish my life would go on without them. Listen, they are God's gift to you. As a church, the children that are back in Genesis Kids right now and the children that are in here, they are God's gift to us. We celebrate that, right? And so it's a good thing. We love kids because God has given them as a gift, and children are a blessing. Number five, the home is the primary training ground for children. We believe this passionately. What's happened over the last 100 years in American culture? It started with education, and then it grew into the way we do Christian education. Brief history, really brief. The rise of the public school was a good idea, but the outcome of the public school was this, that parents began to realize that they were just giving their kids over to somebody else to educate them, and they liked it. I now don't have to learn algebra, to the glory of God. I don't have to grade your English paper. And so we the public school did that because they wanted every child, no matter what home background they had, to have education. But then our mindset became, hey, we're just going to give our kids over to school. They'll teach them. I don't have to do it. I don't have to partner. Now, any good parent knows that's not true. You should be reading with your children from the time they're born until they leave their house. My son is 24 years old. I still occasionally see him sitting in the room with the other kids listening to his mama read books to them, okay? When he leaves, he can take care of that on his own. He still listens to his mama read. I'm telling you, read to your children, all ages. You should be reading with them and be part of their educational process. But what happened is the church then said, man, there's kids who grew up in a church who aren't learning the Bible. They're not learning the things of God. And so the church took on an educational, public education model where they said, bring your kids to church. We will teach them the Bible. We know parents don't, you know, a lot of parents don't have theological background. They don't know all the stories. A lot of new believers in the church, and we need to help them figure it out. And what happened is subtly, we did the same thing in church that we did in our education, where we went from the parents being the primary educators of their children and the primary spiritual educators of their children to handing that over to the church. We do not want that. We want to support what you are doing. We do not want to replace you as the primary spiritual educators in the home. And I did youth ministry. I'm being as gut honest as I can right now. I did youth ministry for almost 20 years in churches, which means I was the guy that, you know, parents of teenagers went, this kid's driving me nuts. He's yours now. You take care of him. And I watched kids come through my youth group. Over those years, there were two type of kids who left high school with a strong faith. The first type of kid who left high school with a strong faith were the kids who came to faith out of homes where their parents were not Christians, but they came to believe in Jesus. A friend brought them to Christ, brought them to youth group, brought them to church, and they didn't have Christian parents, and they came to church, they met Jesus, and the church then helped them because they didn't have a home that was Christian. Those kids graduated and loved, usually went off to college loving Jesus, going on mission, that sort of stuff. The other type of kid who left high school with a real faith were the kids who were in homes whose parents understood that it was not the church's job to train them, it was theirs. And the church was there to help. They had them in youth group, they had them in Sunday school, they had them in church, but they were also reading the Bible, praying, and they were the ones who took the responsibility to make sure their kids knew the Lord. But the hundreds of teenagers, and I'm telling you, hundreds of teenagers who came through the youth ministry that I did over the year, and their mom and dad came to church, but they never opened their Bible at home. Their mom and dad were part of social structures, but they never prayed with their kids. Those kids, super, super high percentage, graduate high school, go to college, and leave the faith. Just letting you know this. If you, as a Christian parent, decide that Genesis Church is the primary educator for your children, I can almost guarantee you they are ditching church and Christ when they leave your house and go to college. I lovingly want to challenge you, no matter what age your kids are, start to own this. Start to speak in their life, read the Bible, pray. And we want to support you in that. All right, next thing, and I got to fly. Number six, God gave the roles in family. I'm not even going to jump into this. I'm not going to, but just understand, we believe that God made women, men and women equal but different, and God is the one who gave us the roles. It's a view called complementarianism, and I'll post some stuff online where you can look at what that means, but I'm not even going to jump into that this morning. Number seven, every family can be a redemptive community. So you're here this morning, you're like, but wait a minute, I'm a single mom. I'm a single parent. My family doesn't fit this. What we believe is that we've just given you like God's perfect plan. Now, every family can be a redemptive community, which means if you're a single parent home, you now look just like Jesus' family. Do you know that? Jesus was born to a single mom that didn't fit the mold. And then what we find out is that Joseph, his earthly father, is around when he's 12, but by the time he's 30, Joseph is long gone. We have no idea when Joseph passed away. It's possible that Jesus and his brothers and sisters grew up their teenage years in a home where they did not have their dad. And the bottom line is this, that no matter what the family looks like, as that family figures out what it looks like to love Jesus and build their lives on him, Christ will use that as a redemptive community. Number eight, every person is welcome in God's family. The language of family is also applied to the church. And 1 John 3:1 says this. It says that, see what kind of love the Father has given to us, that we should be called children of God, and so we are. The reason why the world does not know us is that it does not know him. You hear that? God makes us his children. And so no matter who you are, what background, what story you are, what struggles you have, what failures and what victories, where your struggle is, I want to let you know that God has a family. That God the Father sent his Son into the world. That God the Son gave his life for you. And he invites every person to trust in Jesus, to find God as a great father, to find Jesus the Son as a great big brother who poured out his life for you, and you are invited into God's family, and every one of you is welcome if you will just trust him. Unless the Lord builds a house, they labor in vain that build it. Unless the Lord guards a city, the watchmen keep awake in vain. Now, as a church, there are all kinds of things that we do to make sure we are living out this core value. And I want to just share with you kind of with this outline real quick. That's not on the screens. I'm just telling you. We're going to talk about our proclamation, our promotion, our practice. Proclamation, this is what we teach. Promotion, this is how we filter this into who we are as a church. And then our practice, this is what we try to hand off and involve you in. So here we go. Proclamation, what do we preach? First of all, we will unashamedly proclaim God's design for the family and call people to follow God's prescription for healthy family. We are going to stand up and call people to honor God in their marriages and to honor God in their relationships before marriage and to trust in Christ and to live with different values as followers of Jesus because we have a different king. And so we're going to unashamedly proclaim God's design. We don't hesitate, secondly, to call dads to lead, for wives to be the heart of the home and for children to live in obedience to parents. And so, I didn't deal a lot with this idea of roles in the home, but let me just, dads, lovingly encourage you. God has called you to take the lead in this. And some of you are sitting next to women who love you and who've been praying for years for you to just take the reins of leadership over the spiritual things in your home. Let me encourage you. That's a good thing. When we talk to men here, we're constantly encouraging that. We want men to take this beautiful pastoral role. In other words, who's your kid's pastor? Dad, you are. Who's your wife's pastor? Husband, you are first. Lovingly lead in pastoring and overseeing your family spiritually. And we're not ashamed to lovingly challenge men to step to that point of leadership. Another thing, we're going to challenge parents to set a trajectory for their kids that they will live for the glory and the mission of God. And so hear this. We love you. We want the best for your children. And we believe the best for a lot of your children is to go do crazy things for the glory of God with their life. It would be beautiful if over the next 10 years, because we start with a whole bunch of young families with little kids are like this big, right? And now some of those kids are growing up. It would be beautiful here for the next 10 years. We had kids who were church planters in inner cities and missionaries to third world countries. That would be beautiful. And if you truly honored Christ with your kids, when you held them, you said they are yours. which means when they're 18, if they say, I'm going to go live my life in Haiti for the glory of God, with tears, we will say, glory be to the Lord. And we want to challenge our children to do that, and we want to challenge you to be parents who promote that. Promotion. Just a few things we do real quick. First of all, we will do all we can to provide an atmosphere where marriages can flourish and families can grow. We want to be a church where that is just going on. So we have community groups that are family friendly. We have structure. We're doing an event today that's for families to go out. We want to provide an atmosphere where that's going on. Another thing, our Genesis Kids and Genesis Youth groups are here to support and supplement you as parents. So they're teaching them gospel beautifully. They're about to come in here in just a minute. They've just spent the last almost an hour back in Genesis Kids having the gospel proclaimed, the Bible taught. They are growing in their faith. That's not to do something else for you. That's to support. That's why we give you a card at the end of Genesis Kids. Don't take that card and just flip it off somewhere. Make sure you take that card and you read it, study it, talk to your kids about what they learned. Use it this week in your meal times, as you talk as a family, read the scriptures again, teach the kids. We are here to supplement, and they're there to do that. And we want to have a super strong kids ministry and youth ministry so that it is a healthy place for families. We also are going to challenge, we're going to purposefully have intergenerational community groups. We do community, here's what happens. If you're in a young married small group, what you will do is you will sit around and talk about all the problems that young married families with kids who are toddlers have, right? But nobody knows what the heck they're doing. I mean, I remember sitting in like a young married Sunday school class, and we all had the same problem, but none of us had a really good answer. It wasn't until I got around some people who were like, yeah, I remember when my kids were like that. And you first think you're old, you don't understand. Let me tell you now, with kids in every age group possible, yeah, they do. And it's good to have people who are different ages speaking into our families. We want that. We want kids in your community group to have a friend, other people who are about like parents' age, and maybe even some grandparents, surrogate grandparents in your community group. That's a good thing. All right. Our practice, four things we do real quick. We do family mission. So like we're about to amp up our discussion about going to Charleston this summer. When we do mission together, we involve families all the time. Family mission. Second thing is we do family play. We have lots of activities where we get families together and hang out and play. We do family training. So like our marriage retreat. Other things that we do, sometimes even in sermons, we're trying to prepare you to be godly parents, godly spouses, those sorts of things. And last thing, we do family worship, which means we are every single week providing you a way to take a sheet of paper home. We also post this on Koinonia, our online community, and we prepare a time of worship for you to do at least once a week to spend time with your family praying, singing, reading scripture, talking about God in the Bible, remembering what God has taught your kids. And I just want to challenge you. You need to take that every single week and do that. Now, that's who we are as a church. What we're going to do is we're going to live that out here. So what we're going to do right now, we're actually going to invite our kids to come in and join us. As they're coming in, I need, if you are a parent of children who are in our older youth, or I'm sorry, older children and younger children, which is our kids who are second grade through fifth grade, or four-year-olds through first grade, we need you to stand. Our band's going to come up here. We're going to sing together and worship, okay? We need our parents of those two, if you have kids of those two age groups, we need you to go ahead and stand up right now, and your kids are going to start moving towards you, okay? Then we're going to sing. We're going to sing a song together. And after the song, we're going to roll into a really interesting and special time where if you are a family here with kids, you're going to get to do this, some of these things together. If you're a family here this morning or you're here this morning and you're not with your family, just celebrate and participate in this today with us, okay? And celebrate these things. And as we do this together, we're just going to kind of process together what we said. We're going to see it modeled for us, and we're also going to live some of these things out together as a faith community, all right? So our band's going to start leading us in a song. During the first verse, we're going to ask you to stay seated until all the kids find their folks, because we don't want some kid running around the halls of Eureka High School not knowing where their parents are. And then after we sing this song, we're going to come back and do some special things, all right?